obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
Hi, everyone. I'm Kay.
Hi, Kay.
And I am honored to be here today. This is going to be hard. I saw a little, very beautiful, but very small little hanky, and I said, this is nowhere near going to be enough. We need, and where to go? There we go. A box of Kleenex here today. I haven't been this nervous, felt this much pressure, or been this honored since the first time I was asked to speak at a convention. So I have a couple of thank yous I want to start with. They've already been thanked, but I want to personally thank the AA chair, Cindy, and her bitch, Kirk. Thank you, Kirk. You are never going to live this down. Co-chair Ed, of course, all of the committee volunteers on the AA side, on the Al-Anon side, Melissa and Maddie. Nancy, my host, I want to thank the people who tape these conventions. You know, they go kind of unnoticed because I don't know if it, and there he is. I don't know if any of you have seen him back there. They're always either at the very back of the room or in some corner of the room. But my opinion, they perform a valuable, valuable service. Just even driving here, okay, if you want to applaud them, you can. just even driving here today, I was, I think it was because it meant so much to me to be here today. I just could not go to sleep last night, and I was tossing and turning and tossing and turning, and you know, at 3 o'clock in the morning, I thought, I've got to get up in 3.5 hours, you know, how am I going to handle this? And driving here, when I got in the car, I thought, oh, I'm going to be a mess, I'm not going to be good, this is going to be awful, you know. And I stuck in a CD of an AA speaker that I had heard in Wisconsin a couple of months ago. And one of the things that he was talking about on his CD was that he had, in his early days in AA, he had gone, was speaking at a meeting, and he called his sponsor. He said, I think I was bad last night. I don't think I was very bad. And his sponsor said, well, that implies that you think that you have been good on other occasions. And he said, and you know, it's not really up to you whether you're good or bad. It's all you have to do is the job they've asked you to do, which is to show up. And in my case, share my experience, strength, and hope. And you know, this is the miracle of 12-step programs for me. That's how I got through what I was going through on my way here. And of course, I was going to thank the servers also, because I think they kind of, you know, kind of sneak in so quietly, you know, that they certainly get noticed, but maybe they don't always get acknowledged from the podium, and I wanted to thank them as well. And I also want to thank Marianne. I don't remember meeting Marianne. It was, I believe, Diane's, you were chairman in 2000, year 2000, right? And that's the year that I was here, and I was the Sunday morning speaker. And when Marianne did call me, she said, and Ellen said this, she called and she asked me to speak for 2 years in advance. And I said, do you mean 2011? And she said, no, 2012, this is 2 years away. She said, yeah, is that okay? And I said, well, I at this minute have no plans on that day. You never know, I guess. And she called me a year later, and the first words out of her mouth were, hi, it's Marianne, you know, from the Alana for the Orange County Convention, and I don't want it to appear that I'm stalking you. And I said, stalking me? You haven't called for a year. You need to look up the definition of stalking, or just ask, you know, an Al-Anon person, you know. You apparently weren't very good at this before you came to Brewer, because that's those are my thank yous. I always start the same way. My sponsor always started her pitch by saying, "I'm here because I love an alcoholic." I have to start by saying, "I wish it was only one." It always seems so easy to manage one alcoholic. I mean, really, how hard is that? That's not hard. Multiples of alcoholics and drug, for me, it's alcoholics and drug addicts. You know, the more the merrier for me. I couldn't have been happy. In fact, Cindy's bitch Kirk said to me today, he said, "Can I see your purse? Do you have a purse?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "Do you have a gun in there?" I said, "I wasn't that kind of Al-Anon. I was actually the kind, what can I do for you? What can I do for you? What can I do for you?" You know. I also, you know, when I first came into program, I would hear people refer to their qualifiers. And I was just talking to someone about this outside. I personally refer to myself as my qualifier in this program for more than one reason. Number one, way too many of them to name. Number two, I learned in Al-Anon that it was never about what someone else was or was not doing. It was always, 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 always about how I reacted to it, which then made it my problem, unfortunately. So I consider myself my qualifier in this program. I'll tell you a little bit about my past when I came in. You know, we're supposed to share our experience, strength, and hope. So I need to share a little bit of my experience with you before I came in. I am an only child, and that has its good sides and its bad sides. My father was the drinker in my life. I believe that alcoholism is a self-diagnosed disease. I say this all the time. I have tried to convince people that they have it. Until they're willing to come to it on their own, there's nothing I can do about it. And I did learn that ultimately. And now, you know, if I may think it, but I don't say it out loud anymore. My father drank. His thing for the reason he believed he wasn't an alcoholic is because he supposedly didn't drink until the sun went down. And one time I was sharing in Lake Tahoe, I think it was, at a convention, and it was daylight savings time, and I realized that that was my father's least favorite day of the year. You know, that extra hour of daylight. My father. Unfortunately, never found sobriety. He unfortunately, you know, was a sad, unhappy man. But what I did learn in Al-Anon was I learned to have compassion for the alcoholic. It's one of the greatest gifts I got in this program. I had a lot of anger towards my dad. We had a very acrimonious, very angry relationship, you know, and there was physical stuff and a lot of screaming and yelling, and it wasn't a good scenario. In fact, it was so bad at times that my parents would send me to other people's houses to stay for periods of time because he and I couldn't get along. We just couldn't get along. I unfortunately learned the only way to really have my father's undivided attention was if he was in my face yelling at me. And so what I learned some really bad skills. You know, they were my survival skills at the time, which again at the time served me very well while I was in that alcoholic situation. But when I went out into the world, they did not serve me well any longer, but I clung to them like they were my life's blood until I came into this program. Decades and decades I spent, you know, banging that square peg into the round hole. So we couldn't get along. There was one time, and I talk about this because it's important. I went, I'm an animal person. By the way, the fish on the table. We have fish on the table. I just love that. I'm hoping this one is sleeping. He's at the bottom of the jar. Does that mean if he was dead, he'd be at the top, right?
Right.
He's at the bottom, so he's resting. There's a fish that's a part of my story, so you'll know why later, I've got my eye on this fish. Who's taking him home afterwards? Might be me. So my father and I, he was an animal lover, it was after the sun went down, and he had been drinking, and I also learned that you can't really say to someone you're drunk, because that's arguable, you know. You can say, "I believe you have been drinking," But you can't say you're drunk, because someone can always say, no, I'm not, you know? These are some little communication skills I've learned in Al-Anon. what to say and how to say it. And so I fed a little piece of meat to the dog from the table, and for some reason it bothered my father. It escalated. This is what happens in my experience in alcoholism. It goes from 0 to 60, you know, in the blink of an eye. And there's, you know, you're happy, laughing, giggling, and the next thing you know, in this case, he's gone into the kitchen, grabbed a kitchen knife, and is chasing me around the house. And my mother's screaming, get out of the house, get out of the house. And I ran next door, and I banged on the door, and Henry and Elizabeth, who were, you know, these very sweet neighbors who had the pool in the neighborhood, so everyone hung out there, answered the door, and out of my mouth came, you know, my father's drunk, he's got a knife, he just came after me, I'm afraid he's going to kill my mother. And the look on their faces was one of complete and utter disbelief, because I don't know about the rest of you, but in my case, the alcoholism in my family happened in the home. And that kind of behavior only happened in the home. Outside of the home, my father was the happiest friend. Everyone loved him, and for good reason. He was a wonderful man. He was a wonderful, wonderful man who suffered from a horrible disease. And within the confines of our house, the bad sides of alcoholism reared its ugly head every single night. And they couldn't believe that, in fact, this was happening. But why was I standing there? And I might add, I had stolen, I don't know the age of everyone in the room, but there used to be in the 60s these things called pixie bands. Anyone, someone remembers pixie bands? Those elastic, you know, headband things. And I'd stolen some from Henry and Elizabeth's daughter and returned them. And so they believed me to be an honest child. So having this come out of my mouth, because I was honest about the pixie bands, they knew that I was telling the truth, and they called the police. And I waited in the ivy outside the house, and the police came, and it turned out that my father knew them, you know, and liked him. You know, for all I know, they were drinking buddies, you know. And the next thing I know, they're laughing and talking, and the police say, okay, Ted, bye, you know, and they drive away, and I'm sitting in the ivy because I thought they were going to come and fix this problem in my home. They were going to help us out. Someone was going to help us out. I had broken the cardinal rule. I had told. My father knows I've told, so now I've got to deal with that. I thought the cops were going to help us out. Me and my mom, they were going to help us. And they didn't. They left. And now I had to walk up that driveway. And I was raised in Van Nuys in this little two-bedroom house. And the driveway was maybe from here to the end of the, not even to the end of this room. And it was like 5 miles long to me. And, you know, I walked up that driveway and went in that house, and nobody said a word about it. It was never, ever mentioned again, because that's how it went in my home. Bad things would happen, and as soon as they had happened, no one ever mentioned it again. You know, we just didn't talk about it. We just shoved it under the rug and just went on. And so they would send me to these other people's houses, and I remember one of the houses that I went to, Amy. Amy had the perfect family, you know, both her parents were teachers, she had this great younger sister, they both played a musical instrument, they rode bikes together, they had these great family vacations, you know, and now I show up at the house with what I refer to as my little suitcase of shame, you know, and I think they know that I'm here because I'm a bad kid, that I make my dad drink, I cause my father's drinking, and I cause him to behave badly so I can't be in the house. They never treated me that way. It's just how I felt. They never treated me that way. And in fact, the daughter and I hadn't spoken for decades, and she called not too long ago. And when I was telling her about this and what I felt and what I thought when I was at their home, she said, you know, Kay, I had no idea. Because yet again, it's that Al-Anon thing, and someone was talking about it. It's what we do inside, you know, how we're feeling in our insides don't always match our outsides. In fact, pre-Al-Anon, most of the time, my insides did not match my outsides. It's easy to dress up. It's really hard to clean up my inside. And so I walked in, and they did something I was unfamiliar with. They had dinner together every night at the same table. And on the third or fourth night, I went into the kitchen. I said, Mrs. Mills, you don't have to do this anymore. She said, what do you mean? I said, you know, everyone having dinner together, you know, this thing. And she said, honey, we do this every night. And you know, that just confirmed my suspicions that my family was different. We were messed up. and there was a problem. But I didn't know what the problem was. I didn't know it was alcoholism. I thought it was me. And, you know, arrogant, smug, self-righteous, and dominating. It talks about that, you know. Even at a young age, I was arrogant enough to think that I was the one who was causing all of my father's problems. But when you don't know anything different, that's where you go, you know, especially when they may point at you on occasion and say, it's all your fault. You can't help but kind of take that on. So I moved out into the world and started, I started collecting drug addicts and alcoholics. My personal choice was heroin. Not my personal choice. My drug of choice in other people was heroin. And I loved a good heroin addict. And fortunately, where I was raised, people were experimenting with drugs and alcohol and heroin, you know. And the more messed up, I was telling Kirk, the more messed up, the better, you know. And I also was, and I was listening, you know, on this CD. I was one of those kids, I tried to be an alcoholic. I had the desire to be the alcoholic. I just don't happen to have the disease. I tried getting high. I tried drinking. But it's very hard for a true Al-Anon because I couldn't be high and keep my eye on you. Right? You can't do both, can you? You cannot do both. Diane knows. You can't. You have to be keenly aware. You have to be very, very, very aware and have, you know, full command of all of your senses. You cannot be high at all and really be a good untreated Al-Anon. So I just couldn't keep up with them. I was one of those kids, you know, we'd want to go somewhere and they'd say, is Kay going? Yes, she's driving. Okay, you can go. I was very proud of that, you know. And I had a friend, her name was Robin. I always share about Robin. She was so fabulous. We called her Rockin' Robin. She was just such a treat to be around. She was, you know, a practicing alcoholic drug addict. And we had so much fun. Boy, she was so active. She moved to Lake Tahoe once. I'll tell this quickly. And she called me and she said, you know, I'm moving to Lake Tahoe. She didn't call and say, Kay, I'm moving to Lake Tahoe. What do you think? Now, I don't know if any of you have done this, but one of the first things my sponsor said to me was, okay, you know, what you've got to do is you've got to start listening to hear if there's a question mark at the end of that sentence. Because I thought everyone was always asking my opinion when, in fact, they were just stating things. You know, they were just letting me know something, and I would give forth my opinion. And so I gave Robin my opinion. I said, well, I think it's okay if you go, but you got to call me when you get. Anyway, she didn't call. What a surprise. And used to be able to fly into Lake Tahoe then, a very hazardous flight. They have not done it for a long time because it's so hazardous. So I went into my savings account. You know, I was 17 years old or something. Yeah, 18, I think. I went into my savings account. I got money. I bought a plane ticket, and I flew to Lake Tahoe because I was going to call her and yell at her for having not called me. What I hadn't considered, as bright as I considered myself to be, if she hadn't called me, how do I know where she is? See, you guys didn't even think of that either, did you? You thought going there was a good idea. And you thought that knowing she hadn't called me yet. See, because we are of like mind. So I get off the plane and I realize I have no idea how to find her. It's long before cell phones, you know. And I'm sitting in the airport. Everyone is left except for the guy who runs the Hertz or Avis counter and a couple of the flight stewardesses then, the flight attendants. And this guy from Avis comes up to me and says, are you okay? Oh, God, I was so not okay, but that we wouldn't know that for a long time later. And I explained to him what I was doing there, that I had to find her. And when I was speaking in Lake Tahoe, I was hoping he remained there because I'm hoping he found his way into an Al-Anon room as well. Because when I told him what I was doing there, my purpose, and that I thought the appropriate action would be to go from bar to bar looking for her, he looked at me and said, oh, I'll help you. So, don't you think he was pre-Al-Anon? Don't you think that? I didn't make plans where to stay. He let me stay at his place, and I know he was, but he was a gentleman, as it turned out. And drove me back to the airport, and I got on the plane, drove home. I walk in the door, and Robin calls, because I don't know about you, but that timing of the alcoholics is flawless. And I started screaming at her, you know, look what you made me do. You know, I flew all the way to Lake Tahoe, you know, blaming it all on her. Never once considering that my behavior was that of a lunatic. About 2 years later, Robin calls me on New Year's and says to me, and she'd been trying to get clean and her disease was progressing, and she called and she said, I really need to kick. And I said, you know, arrogant, smug, and self-righteous, knowing nothing about heroin, I said, I can help you with that. And I said, but you're going to come here, there's going to be some rules. The first rule is no lying. Al-Anon's always loved that part. And she said, okay. And I believed her, you know. And the second rule was no drugs or alcohol in the house. And she said, okay. And I believed her. And the third thing was that she come home every single night because I had to keep my eye on her. And she said, okay. And I said, and if you just do those three things, so simple, what I will then do for you is I will pay your rent, I will clean the house, I'll take in the laundry. See, this is the kind of Al-Anon I was. I'll take in your laundry, I'll do the yard work, I'll get your car tuned up, I'll wash it every Sunday. You need a job, I think you need a job, I will find you one. I think you need a bank account, I'll open you up one, I'll start a savings for you, because at some point you're going to want to get your own place, you'll need first and last month's rent, I'll make sure you have that. And she said,
okay.
Of course. Who would say no to that? I mean, you don't have to be a practicing alcoholic drug addict to say no to that. That's a good offer. And I set off and did every single thing I said I would do and more. And I was, just like it was talking about in the thing from that she was reading about, you know, did I stand in the middle of the room with the ladder and the paint can? Oh, yeah. You know, I moaned and groaned and I whined and I ached, you know, look at what you're making me do, you know. And one weekend she just, but I love you. I'm doing this all for you, you know, anything I can do for you. She disappeared one weekend, and I was pissed. And I called her where I thought she was, and they said she was napping. I don't know how familiar you are with heroin jargon. Napping, I don't think, is the word. Nodding out, I think, is the word, but the phrase. But they said she was napping, and I said, put her on the phone. Again, arrogant, smug, self-righteous, and dominating. I started screaming at her yet again at the top of my lungs. Look what you've done. How could you have done this? I knew so little about alcoholism and drug addiction that my words to her were, all you had to do was not use and not drink. That's all you had to do. I had a list as long as my arm. I did all of those things. All you had to do was not drink and use. How could you not have done that? I am furious with you. I don't want to see you anymore. Be here in an hour. I'm throwing your stuff out in the street. I was furious, screaming at the top of my lungs, which is not like me, you know. I mean, alcoholics sometimes didn't bring out the best in me. She came over screeching, don't do this, please, please, please. I said, no, you broke the rules. You're out of here, you know, and with great, in, you know. And that night she killed herself. And it's imperative that I share about her in my story because, again, arrogant, smug, self-righteous, and dominating, I was so arrogant that I believed I had the power of life and death over other human beings. And if my eyes weren't on them, and if they weren't within my line of vision and within my care, they weren't going to make it. And you know what? Without recovery, alcoholism and drug addiction can end in death. And it has nothing whatsoever to do with me. I didn't know that at the time, and I carried that with me for at least 10, 12 years. Her parents blamed me. Her family blamed me. Her boyfriend blamed me. And I, being the good, untreated Al-Anon, was willing to take on all that blame. Because after all, I had kicked her out of my house. And I couldn't handle it. And so I moved from the San Fernando Valley to a place where I thought I'd be safe. I moved to Hollywood. And in Hollywood, I found a bunch of other addicts and alcoholics within, you know, a very short period of time. I love to cook. I joke about this. They love to eat for free. And so I always had a house full of them, you know. Couldn't do enough for them. They loved it. And in the process of this, a friend of mine's girlfriend called me, and, well, she came racing over to my house in full drama, you know, racing up to the house, screeching, you know, so-and-so is freaking out, you know, you've got to come help. This is how I see myself. I don't know if any of you feel this way. She says to me, I need you. But people, see, I love that. People are nodding all over the room. You are the pure Al-Anons, aren't you? You know what that means. When you hear that phrase, I need you, the cape unfurls. Doesn't it? It does. You become twice your size, the big S pops out of your chest. You know, and you are ready to go. So she says, I need you. Flap, 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 the cape goes. And I look at her and I go, let's go. And I get in the car and I drive over, and there's this guy hanging out his window, you know, broken glass, thrown all of his furniture out. And I have never seen this. He was in a drug-induced psychotic episode, and I'd never seen this before. He had lost his mind. And I had to admit, not out loud, because I didn't want her to know, I had no idea what to do. I always knew what to do. You know, people always came to me, what do you think, Kay? What do you think? You know, and I wore that, as I said, as a badge of honor. And now I don't have a clue. I don't know how to deal with this. His dog was shaking in the ivy. And being a dog person, I grabbed that dog and I stuck her in my car. I talk about her. Her name was Riley. She, you know, she suffered from someone else's drinking and using as well. And she was okay, but I think she did develop a bit of an eating disorder. But I say, well, that's not my program, so I couldn't help her there. But I did try to help her in all the Al-Anon ways that I could. And I go into his house, and I call the cops. They take him off, you know, and he's in county and five-point restraints. And I go into his house, and it's just a total mess. And he's broken a water thing, and water is flooding, and I'm trying to clean things up. He's a writer, and I'm picking up wet paper. I don't, you know. And I go to move his mattress, and something wiggles under my fingers. I know, ew, right? And I pick up move the mattress, and there's a little fish on the floor. Now you know why. I've got my eye on this little fish. And it's a betta fish, a fighting fish, which was good for him or her. And it's flopping on the ground. I think, oh, this fish! And I grab the fish. I'm trying to find an unbroken, you know, glass, drinking glass, to put him in, put water. So my friend is in county. The dog is, you know, shivering in the car. And here's this fish. And I get everybody taken care of, and everything's okay. Now I take this fish to the fish store, and I go up in all seriousness to the fish guy, and I said, this fish has had a traumatic experience. so serious. The adult fish of an alcoholic. oh my God. So he gives me these drops for the fish, and I put the fish on my windowsill, and I give him the drops every day, and I save that fish's life. So I know it's a good thing. I couldn't save Lawrence, but I could save that fish, and I was going to. At the same time, miraculously for me, a friend of mine called me and said, my husband's drinking is bothering me. And I said, you know, there is this place called Al-Anon. I think you need to get to a meeting. Oh my God, he's right. Can you imagine saying it with all sincerity? I've got some things to do. I've got to check on Lawrence. I've got to, you know, go check Riley still. Maybe I need to take the fish back to the store for some more drops. I've got some cleanup to do at his house because I wanted to clean his house. I didn't want him to come home and face the mess. You know, as long as you were under my care, I would make sure that you never, ever felt subsequently never suffering the consequences of your own actions. I was just nailing people's coffin shut. You know, as long as I was around, I was denying people the dignity of living their lives the way they chose to live their lives, making certain mistakes that may have led them to a better life. But if I was in your life, I was going to keep you from ever doing that, because I was going to take care of everything and make sure, to the best of my ability, you never suffered, you never were in pain. You know, and in the process of doing that, I was prolonging the pain and making your life worse. And I didn't know that till I came into this program. So I say to her, you know, let me do a couple of things. I'll make some calls. I'll find out where a meeting is. I'll pick you up. I'll take you to that meeting, because I really think you need to get to a meeting. And I did. I took her. And well, one thing that happened was they had greeters. I hated the greeters. I don't know if anyone has this issue, but, you know, when I was talking about this with someone earlier, when I came in to program, I didn't want people to touch me or hug me. I didn't want them to know very much. Winnie Eddy speaks about this, you know. I tried to, you know, make like I wasn't interested so people wouldn't think I had a problem, you know. But the mere fact that you're in the room implies, you know, and as this AA guy said, you know, we come into these rooms under the lash of alcoholism. We stay because it's where we find the solution. But what first brings us here is that there is a problem. I don't think anybody who's in Al-Anon on a Monday night says, you know, what should we do tonight? Should we go, you know, to Ruth Chris? Should we go for a walk on the beach? Maybe we should go to an Al-Anon meeting. You know, that isn't how it comes about. Most of us come in here on their hands and knees. I came in here because someone else needed a meeting, not because I needed a meeting. And I sat in that meeting. The greeters tried to come at me. No, not me, her. I'm fine. You know, she needs a hug, though. You can hug. Go ahead, hug her. But not me. But stay away from me. And I sat in the meeting. I kept looking at, you know, someone would say something profound. And I was so obsessed with her. I go, did you hear that? Write that down. That is good. You know, she, after that first meeting, gee, I don't know why, never went back. And I never left. And that was 25 years ago this month. So I just can't believe it. I just can't believe it. There was a woman sharing at the meeting saying that she had 10 years in program. My first thought is, what is wrong with her? 10 years? And she's bragging about this? 12 steps? How hard is that? There's a couple of books on the literature table. Really, how hard is this program? Don't be saying you've got 10 years. Zip it. That is not a good thing to be bragging about. But I kept going back. And I, to this day, I think I know why. But I honestly can't say I know for sure. But it must have been the palm of God's hand on the small of my back.
To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
And he just kept pushing me into those rooms because there's no other reason that I should have gone back. I hated everything about Al-Anon. Not, there wasn't a thing I liked about it. Well, let me say that. There was only one thing for a long time that I heard that meant something to me, and it's in the closing, and it says, there is no situation too difficult to be bettered and no unhappiness too great to be lessened. And the bottom line was I was so unhappy. Clearly, why was I focusing always on someone else's life? Because I was so broken and so sad and so unhappy inside myself that to look at that was far too painful for me. So I had to look at other people. I had to put my focus anywhere but on myself. And Al-Anon, and that's probably why I disliked it so much, made it very clear right from the beginning that that just wasn't going to work in those rooms in Al-Anon. They didn't want to hear about my trials and tribulations and what he or she was doing. They wanted to know about me. I didn't want to talk about me. I wanted to talk about them. nobody wanted to hear about the thems in my life. They wanted to know about me. So I just stayed in the back row. I sat by the sliding glass door. I learned very quickly what happens when you identify as a newcomer. By the way, any newcomers here today? Any alcoholics here today? Thank you so much for being here. It means a great deal to me that you are all here for this. One of the things I heard when I first came in, I'm sharing this specifically for Marianne, because in the note that she wrote me, it was something that she said that I said. One of the first things I heard in the meetings, again, another reason not to like Al-Anon was, you know, I heard someone from the podium say, well, would you rather be right or would you rather be happy? You know already, I know you know. And I thought, what a stupid statement. Being right makes me happy. I don't get that. There isn't a choice. One follows the other. You don't pick between them, you know? So all these things were being said, you know, live and let live, all these slogans. And I was, you know, I wasn't nasty to people outward. When they would say, hi, how are you? I'd go, I'm fine, thank you. You know, I didn't go, get away from me. I mean, I was pleasant, but I was silent. I just stayed in the back room. And finally, I asked someone to sponsor me. It took me a year. I do not recommend that. But it took me a year, and I was sure she'd say, you? No, never. And I asked her to sponsor me, and she said I'd be honored. And so now, anytime anyone asks me to sponsor them, the first thing I say is I'll be honored. I would be honored. And I thought she says that now, but when she really learns about me, she's not going to like me anymore. When she learns that, you know, I made my father behave the way he did, I killed my best friend, you know, my other friend, you know, went into a drug-induced psychotic episode on my watch. I let that happen. You know, if she finds all that out about me, she's not going to like me. And when I did my four-step, by the way, I believe that Al-Anon is a 12-step program, not a group therapy session. And I say this because I've been in therapy. And what I've gotten out of the 12 steps is what has changed my life. It is not okay for me to go to Al-Anon and just sit and talk or sit and listen. I have to work the steps. Very often I have to go back to 1, 2, and 3. Every day I do 3 and 11. I must work the steps. That is when my life started to change. And when I am in doubt and when I'm having trouble in my life, there is a step for that problem. And if I rework that step, I will find a solution. I also find, bless you, solutions in, you know, in all the things that the... You're laughing. I'm so Al-Anon. I heard that out of the corner of my ear. Is that why you're laughing? I'm proud. I'm proud to be Al-Anon. So I kept coming, and Marjorie was my sponsor, and she was my sponsor for the first 18 years of my program. We didn't always agree. She used to really piss me off sometimes. She told me I always had to wear a skirt when I spoke, and I said, you know, that's not right, telling people what to do. I thought we come to this program to stop telling people what to do. You know, I was always up for an argument. Oh, you know, and she'd say, whatever. You know, just wear a skirt. You know. She also told me not to ask how people are, unless I'm willing to hear the answer. And she said she learned that very quickly because she would ask someone how they were and they started to tell her and she goes, oh, I gotta go. And her sponsor said, you can't do that. If you ask someone how they are, you have to stand there and listen. She said, so the first thing I did was I stopped asking people how they are. And and that's exactly what I did. And then I moved on and became the kind of person when I ask someone how they are, it's because I actually wanna know. I am interested in hearing. You know, I said that Al-Anon gave me compassion. I attend open AA meetings, and I have the gift of going to conventions around the United States, and I get to hear speakers that I would otherwise not hear, both AA and, unfortunately, it's usually one Al-Anon to like five AAs at an AA convention, which is makes sense. But we're strong. We only need one. But we're mighty. I get to hear fantastic AA speakers. And it was by attending open AA meetings that I started to gain compassion for the alcoholics in my life, because I heard their pain. I heard that they weren't drinking at me or because of me or in spite of me. They were drinking because they were in pain. My father drank because he was in pain, and he knew no other way to ease that pain. And when drinking wasn't working any longer, he still kept trying, because like me, he was still trying to pound that square peg in that round hole, because he did not find Alcoholics Anonymous. And like I ultimately found Al-Anon. And it was after he passed that I was able to make my amends to my father. And I love him so much today, I can't tell you. It makes me very sad that I did not get to experience life with my father from an Al-Anon perspective. We would have had a whole different relationship. And it makes me sad. But what I can do is carry this message so that if people are still living with their alcoholics, they don't have that loss like I had. They still have that opportunity that I no longer have. I found a God of my understanding in this program. I didn't like that when I first came here. The spiritual aspect of this program, I was raised, my father was Catholic. I went to Episcopalian churches, and the God of my understanding was a punishing God. And that was very hard for me. I thought he didn't like me. That was a big thing for me. I was always kind of running from God. I thought he didn't like me because my father would tell me, he sees everything you do. And not only that, my father would say, is he knows what you're thinking. Ouch, that's not a good thing to say. So I couldn't, there was nowhere to hide from God, in my opinion. And here I kept failing at my relationships. I got married. He now, admits to having a drinking problem. I didn't share about him for years. And for anyone who may have known him through me or whatever. And I was very proud. He had an ulcer and started drinking scotch with milk. And I thought that was so good. I used to say, he's so clever. He has an ulcer and he's found a way to still drink. He's so smart. But it was pre-Al-Anon, and that relationship pushed every single button in me, because here I was again living with an alcoholic. And even though their personalities were very different, it pushed every single button. And I didn't know what was going on, but I knew the relationship wasn't working, and I ended it. And I floated around for years, kind of one relationship after another for a year at a time. I mean, I wasn't promiscuous. I was just, busy. let's put it that way. but I was always, finding fault with other people, and always, in my relationships and friendships. There's one of my favorite lines in Al-Anon, and it was Marjorie's, my sponsor's favorite line. It's on April Fool's Day, April 1st, and I think Courage to Change, maybe one day at a time, and it says, the contented, well-adjusted person need not find fault with others. Again, I read that and I went, well, that makes no sense. Of course I need to find fault. How are they going to learn? Someone said to me once, you are horrible to be in a car with. I said, why do you say that? He said, well, you get so mad and you're always telling people what to do. I said, well, someone has to tell them. He said, does it always have to be you? And then I was at a meeting once, and this guy got up to the podium. He said, since I've been in Al-Anon, the people on the road have become much better drivers. And I thought, darn, that's... I said, darn, that's going to have to become me if I'm really working my program, this guy was right. So I worked my steps. I wasn't a real joiner. My sponsor sponsored a lot of people, and everybody loved her. And she had 10 years when I asked her to speak, and I overlooked that. I didn't hold that against her like I did the other woman who had 10 years. And one time, and it was probably my third favorite time that I've been asked to speak, I was asked to speak with her. I was celebrating 10 years and she was celebrating 20, and they asked me to speak with her, and it was a great honor. we had a wonderful relationship. As I said, we didn't always agree. her husband was a member of Pacific Group, and you know, they have certain things, and, you know, great. I think it's terrific. And I know Clancy, and I love him, and I've spoken with him a couple of times, and I enjoy his company. But it was a foreign world to me. And for her to want to bring me into that world, I just didn't want to conform to it because I still was clinging to ideas of my own. But they clearly weren't working. And what I started finding out was that the only time, at certain periods of time in my life, the only times I seemed to feel okay was when I was in an Al-Anon meeting, you know, and then I'd leave and it may come back. But while I was in that room, I felt good. And she told me I had to take a commitment. I didn't want to. She told me I had to become the coffee girl. I said, I don't drink coffee. She said, you don't have to drink it. You just have to make it. So I said, okay, and I did it. And that's when people started learning my name. They had to, you know, because I was there now early, something I really didn't like doing. But now I'm there early. And when they said hi, she had told me I had to say hi back. And she taught me how to welcome newcomers, not by telling me I had to, but at the break of every meeting, she'd get up and she'd pay attention when the room identified who was a newcomer. And at the break, she'd get up and go over to all those people and welcome them to the room. So it wasn't always what she told me to do. It was by her example that I learned some incredibly wonderful things. So my relationship with a higher power came around. I will tell you that it morphed. It's morphed a number of times. And it hasn't always been easy. It is easy today. I am never, ever, ever without God today. I am always in touch with my higher power today. Always. And I'm not saying that to brag. I'm just saying I am. I am. One of the reasons I am is I stopped asking God for things he couldn't give me. I'm very fond of saying, the God of my understanding does not find me parking spots. He doesn't get me jobs. He doesn't get the boyfriend to call. He doesn't make the tumor benign. These, and for me personally, this is a gift that we have here. We get to pick who our higher power is, what our understanding of our higher power is. You know, I think Lois said, I read in one of the books that someone had said to her, you know, I don't know what my God is. And they said, well, she said, make a list of what the qualities your God would have. And the person wrote down the list and she handed it to her and then she handed it back and said, here's your God. We get to decide what that is. So for me, what was happening was I was asking God for certain things and when it wasn't happening, I'd get pissed. You know, it would upset me. I'd get mad. Or I'd feel that it was happening because I was being punished, that I'd done something wrong, and this is the comeuppance I got. And, you know, but it was never coming from a loving God is really what my point is. I had to find a way to a loving God. There are certain qualities that the God of my understanding has. Wisdom, patience, tolerance, humor, understanding, guidance. These are all qualities that we as human beings can possess also. I refer to them as our godlike qualities. Certainly I'm not God, you know, I don't know, you may be, but I'm not. But I can possess those qualities. All I have to do is think, how would God want me to behave right now? Whenever I am in question, I say, what would God have me do? And before the thought is even complete in my head, I know exactly the right thing to do. And if I don't, I do something very different than what I used to do. I wait. I don't have the compulsive need to act. Even if I have no idea what I'm doing, I've got to do something, you know. Now, sometimes the something I do is absolutely nothing. I wait until I have more information, until it becomes clear, until I'm in a place of serenity. You know, in Alcoholics Anonymous, you get sobriety. In Al-Anon, you get serenity. And one of the problems with serenity is that it's intangible. It is not like not picking up a drink and swallowing it. It's intangible. So that means that you really, really, really must have faith to stay connected and to have that serenity. You must have that faith. If I ever say we, I am not presuming to speak for you or on your behalf ever. This is all just me personally. but I know for me to have that serenity, I must walk in faith. And today I'm able to do that, as I said, in a way that I've never been able to do. Marjorie developed a brain tumor and got very, very sick, and I wasn't working at the time, and I was able to be there every single day that she was in the hospital for, I think, 6-8 weeks. I was the day shift. I did have a couple of Al-Anon slips, I must be honest. Because I was the day shift, and one of the two, her two sponsees that were, you know, there all the time in charge. One was a night shift, one was a day. And her family, her son and stuff, deferred to me. Still, no matter how much program you have, someone defers to you, you know, the cape unfurls, you get a little puffed up, and big S pops out. And people would come, so many people would come to the hospital that the nurse one day said to me, "Who is she? Is she someone special?" I said, "You have no idea." You know, because this woman carried the message of Al-Anon every waking moment of her life. Her home and her husband's home was constantly filled with alcoholics and Al-Anons. All, every time. That she was, "Oh, where are you? Oh, I'm on my way to pick up so-and-so, take him to meeting. Oh, I'm going to go talk to so-and-so." I mean, she was an incredible example of what it means to be of service in this program. So when people would be there, you know, at the hospital, I got to pick who came into the room and when. I did like that. I did let everyone in. It was a terrific thing, actually. I'm joking. I was happy to see everyone who came in. She unfortunately did not survive it. And it was very hard for me to lose her. Someone said to me, "Well, you've been in program so long. Do you really need a sponsor?" Oh, my God. What was she thinking saying that to someone like me? I mean, maybe there are some people can spend a long time in Al-Anon and not need a sponsor. I am not one of them. I need someone to check my behavior. I will always need someone to run things by, someone who I can trust that's going to say, "Kay, you're wrong." No, you need to make an amends. By the way, amends and apology, that was a problem for me in the steps, you know. I looked up the definition of the words. Whenever I have something like that, I'll look up the definition of the words. In the dictionary, the definition of an apology is to take responsibility for having hurt someone's feelings. The definition of amends is to mend the situation. Sometimes I have to do both. I have to apologize and make amends, you know. But these things became clearer to me as I moved forward in my program and the more time I spent in Al-Anon and being of service. So now the God of my understanding, I'm connected with, and I have Marjorie. And then I had something happen before Marjorie got sick. I was telling Maddie this. And I've already told you I was busy for a while in my life. I met a man a week after I had just had a conversation with God saying, "You know, I don't need anyone. I'm fine. I'm happy. I love being alone. I'm used to it. I prefer it." A week later, I met someone who I've been with for 11 and a half years. And he is the love. My heart is beating right now. I mean, if you took my pulse has sped up just speaking of him, just thinking of him. That's how I feel about him. I actually, though I thought it was funny reading that, I do most of the things that you read about. I do care about how his day went. I do not want to yell at him when he comes in. He's not an alcoholic. In my opinion, he should be an Al-Anon. But it's between the 300 of us. I won't let him listen to this CD, although he has heard this before. We do what we refer to as handling each other with care. And it sounds simple, but you know what? It is simple. We just handle each other with care. That doesn't mean we don't get in spats, and every once in a while, you know, someone will call and say, "Hi, how you doing?" I want to kill them. But very, very, very rarely. And now, in my life today, I know what "would you rather be right" or "would you rather be happy" actually means. And it is very easy for me today to say, "You know what, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that." Or, "I'm crabby, I apologize, don't take it personally, I'm just having a rough day." It's very easy for me to do that today. I love this man more than I can't even put it into words. Do I think God gave me this relationship? I do not. Because the God of my understanding doesn't give me relationships, and not you. You know, that's why I had to change. The God of my understanding was when someone would stand at a podium and say, "I'm so grateful," I'm going to get sad here, I'm so grateful that, you know, the cancer went away when someone sitting in the back row doesn't have that same result. And so that's when I had to redefine my higher power. I had to start only asking him for things that he could give me. Courage, insight, wisdom, strength, patience, tolerance, understanding, humor. All of those godlike qualities. I turn to him. When I am struggling, I don't ever pray for an outcome. I pray for whatever it is I need to find the solution. And if it's a solution, if it's an ending I don't like, my mother, who I was very close with, my best friend, my champion in the world, got very sick, and she developed Alzheimer's. So her last words to me, a full sentence to me, I said to her, I love you, you're my mom. And she looked at me and she said, I love you, you're my worth. And I was with her every single day. And I fed her, I did everything. And it was the greatest honor of my life to give back to this woman what she had given me. And where is that darn box of Kleenex?
Here, here.
Alcoholics, aren't it?
And what God gave me was, he didn't make her well. He didn't take away the Alzheimer's. He gave me everything I needed to be there for her every day to the best of my ability. And also to be there for Mark still, too, my boyfriend. I mean, he gave me, you know, remember when I told you the cape unfurled, that I felt like Superwoman? He gave me what I needed to become Superwoman in that time in her life. I was able to do things, stay awake longer, operate on much less sleep, not eating, not exercising, not having fun. I was able to operate on regular things that we need to sustain ourselves. I was able to go and go and go and go without those things. I think God gave me those things. When I'm patient with Mark and tolerant with Mark, I think God gives me those things. I'm going to close. I don't know how long I'm supposed to speak, but I'm going to close. And, you know, I want to say to anybody who's going through anything in life, I heard someone say, you know, we've heard the phrase, God, you know, never closes one door without opening another. But in Al-Anon, I heard that though God never closes one door without opening another, sometimes it's hell in the hallway. And, you know, when it's hell in the hallway, get to a meeting. There will always be someone there to walk you through what you need. You know, a bunch of my friends came over the night before my mother died, and she was at home with us. And the caregiver that was there, I said, you know, I'm going to cancel it. I don't think these friends of mine are coming. I don't think they should come. And she took my hand, she looked at me, and she said, let them come. Let them give you the strength that you're going to need. Because as it turned out, my mother was to die the next morning, and they said, let them come. Let them be here for you. They were all Al-Anons, and they brought a meeting to my house. You know, it's just, it's an incredible thing. And with Marianne, the whole idea of this at some point is, in some ways, can be overwhelming, but in the other way, the most magical, mystical, marvelous, wondrous way is, this is what Al-Anon is all about to me. We have good times and we have bad times. You know, being in program did not take away bad things happening in my life. What it did was it gave me a way to get through them. People in Al-Anon come, they're like buoys, you know, they just lift you up and they carry you through it. You couldn't, if you wanted to, go through something alone once you've been a member of Al-Anon for a while. You can't. They will climb in through a window to get to you if they have to. You know, don't, really, seriously. Al-Anons often don't take no for an answer when they know you're in trouble. And I thank God for that. The God of my understanding helps me to stay in gratitude and in appreciation for the 12 steps of Al-Anon, for all 12-step programs, but specifically Al-Anon. I close in the same way every time. I try to honor those who came before me because it's those who came before me that made it possible for me to be here and for me to learn what I have learned. And though they may not still be around, they are around because everything we say, not everything, some of us are smart enough to make up new things to say, but most of the things I say have come from somebody who came before me. And Winnie Eddy was my sponsor for a while. And one of the things that she did was she closed with a poem. One of my issues, and I don't know about you guys, just me, was about letting go. I had trouble letting go. Did you have trouble letting go? You know, I was telling Nancy outside, because Nancy, we were talking about this, and I have trouble letting go sometimes. I said, really? And you're the only one. You know, I would... not me. I'd hand it off with the right and grab it right back with the left, you know. And Winnie Eddy closed with this poem, and it goes like this. Just as the child brings his broken toys with tears for me to mend, I took my broken dreams to God because he was my friend. But then, instead of leaving him at peace to work alone, I stuck around and tried to help with ways that were my own. And when at last I cried, "How can you be so slow?" he said, "My child, what could I do? You never did let go." So, on behalf and in honor of the life that I have today, which is beyond words, I thank you for teaching me how to let go. Because if I hadn't, I would not have it. I love you all, and thank you for being here. And again, a special thanks to Mary Ann for asking me to be here, and for Maddie carrying on for her. Thank you.
We hope you've enjoyed this recording. To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.